This is the Geek Improvement Podcast. Tune in. Geek out.
Welcome to the Geek Improvement Podcast, the official podcast of geekimprovement.com, helping you find and keep track of the things you geek out about. I'm Alexis Santos, and to my left or my right, wherever he wishes to be in his Skype den of ambiguity, is Zach Erickson.
Hello, it's been a long time, and it's Thanksgiving Day in the States, and we have so many geeky, wonderful things to be thankful for.
Man, yeah, it's been 3 months.
Yeah, wow. That enough is something to be thankful for here.
Yeah, yeah, so happy.
Not 3 months off, but, you know.
Yeah, we had a 3 months vacation.
We're back.
And we're happy to. Yeah, we're back. So, first of all, yeah, happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Enjoy your turkey, enjoy your family, and, you know, take some time to relax and keep in mind, you know, it's not just about, you know, work keeping you busy and keeping you from podcasting for 3 months.
Exactly. And not only that, just a little Thanksgiving tidbit from the resident neuroscientist of the podcast. The whole tryptophan thing, not as true as you might think.
Really?
It's not really the tryptophan that makes you tired. It's the fact that your entire body is shutting down because it's trying to digest your food that you just ate.
You know, I had a feeling about that, because even if it's not tryptophan, and I just, you know, go to the good old Golden Corral and load up my plate, and it's like, oh man, I can't move.
The freaking, yeah, pasta, everything must have had tryptophan in it. You know what I mean?
Like, my entire left side of my brain is shutting down and focusing on must processed, must digest.
Exactly. So, you know, like it is that there is tryptophan in turkey, and tryptophan is the predecessor of, I believe it's serotonin, but, you know, or not predecessor, it does do that, but it's not like your body is totally overdosing on serotonin. It's just you had way too much food, and now your body is having to deal with that.
You know, I think we found a business here, Zach. We need to sell, like, bottled tryptophan. We need to, like...
Oh, I'm sure it's out there.
100 turkeys.
I do not doubt it.
And condense them somehow, maybe in a, I don't know, some sort of dried food machine thing. Anyway, so I guess we should cover, you know, why have we disappeared? Well, you know, part of it is work. You know, we've our day jobs and whatnot. But also, and the main reason behind it is because we're not just, you know, the Geek Improvement Podcast. We are also a website, and that website is coming along quite nicely, actually. We've been pouring a lot of our time and resources into it, and happy to say we're going to have a open beta here in January.
Yeah. In fact, Alexis, first of all, when Alexis says we, he means the royal we, and I had no part in this.
Well, emotional support and sound, yeah. You know, sounding board.
Yeah, exactly. But Alexis actually showed me it this morning, and pretty impressed, man. Like, so Alpha's going on soon.
December.
And yeah, December. And so we'll get that figured out, I guess. And, you know, we'll see what's going on and get things started. And it's definitely got huge potential. And I'm excited for other people to see it and, you know, to see what's going on with that and get their mitts on it.
Yeah, so soon you'll actually be able to find out what we mean by we're helping you find and keep track of the things you geek out about. This has been in the works for a long time.
And not only that, but I mean, it's going to be something really interesting for, you know, as far as just logging everything too, you know, like cataloging it just the whole idea of cataloging things it's great. I won't get into anything more than that, but I am very, very excited about the potential here. So
this week for the show, we have a very loose format. We don't have it really segmented into most of our segments, as typically you'd hear something like
Comic Geek,
or let's see, which other one here? Oh, steampunk. Oh, man.
There's no Scott Fletcher.
I was waiting for Scott Fletcher. I gotta email him about that.
But, come on, Fletcher.
What are we paying you for, man? So I guess we can start off the show with giant boxing robots. Okay, so Sci-Fi, you know, the Sci-Fi channel. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of the Sci-Fi channel because of their original movies. They're not always the best. They don't always have the best scripts, but they
seems like it's been going a little downhill lately. You know, a lot more wrestling in on their channel and stuff like that.
Yeah, G4 even they shut down, or they're rebranding as GQ for TV. It's like, come on, people, gotta fill the geek void. I mean, there's something there, but Sci-Fi has unveiled a giant boxing robot reality show. So it's called Robot Combat League, and instead of, you know, the what was the name of the show where they'd have like these robots, these teams would build, and they put them in this arena and they
BattleBots.
Yeah,
isn't that where what's his name, Grant Imahara from Mythbusters, that's where he got his start. I think
I'm not sure if it's where he got his start, but I know that he was involved with that kind of stuff. Yeah,
at least like his, like, being on screen on TV and stuff like that. Anyways, he was a pretty big shot in that.
Well, yeah, that kind of thing is being amplified by the Robot Combat League. Apparently, Sci-Fi has been working on this for a good while, and this week they unveiled, hey, look, this is what we're doing, and it's Rock'em Sock'em Robots with, like, these... They're not exactly mechs, because you can't step inside them. They're just, like, mannequin robots. And apparently they shadow box. Not sure exactly how you control them. But it seems like it has some potential.
That's crazy. Well, have you seen the movie Real Steel?
I've not, no.
Okay, so Real Steel is kind of the same sort of idea. I mean, it's a little futuristic and whatever, but it's basically this boxing league. I don't know. Now, do they say that they shadow box? That's what it's called?
They said something about that, yeah.
Okay, so basically, if that is actually what they're doing, then essentially in the movie, the guy, the robot, mimics his movements. So it's almost like two boxers that the person punches. And so you'd wear some sort of like the remote control would basically be like a series of whatever, like some sort of suit that you would wear. And when you punch, the robot punches. So if that's what they're doing, like in the movie, that's kind of what it is, except it's just, he just mimics him without the suit. But I can imagine that would be the technology behind it, that, okay, one punch go, two punch go, you know, whatever, and you're controlling it that way.
Yeah, that's what they say they're using here. I'm not sure if it's powered by Kinect or just some guy, okay, he threw a left punch, so press the left punch button.
Yeah, who knows, right? So it's interesting, though. Like, if you actually take a good look at the pictures, though, all of these, first of all, it's not wireless, right?
No.
You see this huge cable going right into the backside of the freaking, like right up to the pipe of the, right.
The bots have to go to the bathroom somehow, but it's not only like I guess cables must be in there too, but it's a pipe to hold these things up. They say that they don't just like topple over. The next version they hope to build without these pipes propping them up. So
I'm imagining the thing is with these huge robots is I'm imagining like Asimo fighting Asimo, like walking out like super slow, and then like super slow punch.
He will defeat you with his trumpet playing prowess.
Or like I think back, I don't know if it was on Geek Improvement or back in the days of the A to Z podcast when we were doing that. We talked about that robot that like fetched a beer from the fridge, you know. Like,
oh yeah, slow. Yeah.
But that's obviously, fighting isn't going to be exciting if that's the case. So I'm really interested to see if this is actually
fluid,
going to.
If it's not just one punch. Wait. One punch. Wait.
Exactly. Like it's got to be really fluid, but it's definitely the first time we've seen something like that, so I'm pretty excited to see where they go. I like this one on the page there. Again, folks, Geek Improvement, is it podcast.geekimprovement.com?
That is correct.
For the show notes, And if you go to the link for this, there's the red robot that basically has like the old school fire axe for a head.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. I didn't notice that.
Right? Like it's that old school red fire axe. And then that's the head for that robot, which is pretty sweet. And the other one looks like some sort of robotic cyborg gorilla underneath that dome there.
Now, you have to kind of wonder, how do these people get picked? Because I doubt they have a hand in building these things. They may have some, like, maybe it should have this and that, but something tells me they're not building these things themselves.
Well, either that or that. I think it's probably a lot more produced than a regular fighting league would be. Yeah. Where basically they just say, okay, guys, let's build a bunch of robots. Let's get a bunch of pros in here, build a bunch of robots, and then we'll fight them. And it's not necessarily a league in that sense where you have people who are coming in to compete and more of just, let's just see if we can get robots to fight each other first. And then we can make it a competition from outside people later.
Now, in 100 years, when the robot uprising occurs, they'll point back to this very moment saying, these savages! And they'll have a...
Back in the days when robots were forced to fight each other in the ring.
In the dark days, yeah.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Oh, man, I was going to break into All in the Family song. Anyway, so next up on our hit list here of show notes is an iPhone app that lets you prototype apps on paper. It's called Pop, and it's made by a company out in Japan, if I remember correctly. So essentially, you can draw out your app ideas, your user interface for your app on paper, instead of doing it like an Illustrator or Photoshop or making a quick wireframe or even with HTML even. And you draw it out on paper and you take a picture of each screen, and once the app sucks it in inside, and then you can like highlight essentially hot areas of your image. And say, okay, so this button wants, I want it to be a back button. And so you like click and drag, or tap and drag, I should say. And when I tap here, on this area, it does X or it does Y. It leads to this page. And so it's pretty neat for non-developers.
This is really, really cool, actually. I'm just, oh, geez, my Mario lunchbox on my shelf just about opened and killed me.
No leftover sandwiches, maybe from
no leftover sandwiches. No, I'm just looking at this here to see what did I do. I don't know how to get out of this. Now, will it let you import pictures into your app? Do you know?
Oh, you mean like say this is a take a picture
screen?
Oh, see,
that's you can do that. So another thing that it'll let you do too is if you use another app to draw it. So for example, let's say Alexis, you have a template for Geek Improvement. You're making you're working on the layout for the iPhone app that you want to do.
Okay.
You go into Sketchbook Pro or something similar.
Oh.
Sketchbook is what I use. Create a template or something like that, or all these little bits and pieces. You could do it in Photoshop, Photoshop Touch on the iPad. Get all of that stuff together, save it to your camera roll, and then import it into this app. And unfortunately, is it universal? Did they on their website? They were only showing the iPhone version, but I think it's universal.
I'm not sure.
They can try out, comment, and prototype their. Okay, so it says on your iPhone, iPad, or web browser.
Huh. So that's probably why you need an account to log into this thing.
Yeah, probably. And so essentially then you can work on this particular, you could work on it, import it all into the Pop app, and then do all the hot buttons and whatever that way. But that it's really cool. So you don't necessarily have to draw it by hand. You can draw it by hand if you want to, or if you want to do it a different way and import your pictures that way from your camera roll, you could do that. I think this is a really, really cool idea. I've actually, as I was, as we were looking for this, I was looking for a few different apps to kind of help maybe, just prototype some sort of a mobile thing just to tweak with it and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And this is honestly the easiest thing that I've seen so far.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because there are other people who, if you go online and search for prototyping with, I think it's Yeah, with Keynote, like there are entire big, huge templates and things that you can use to prototype apps in Keynote.
That's pretty interesting.
But it's nowhere near this easy.
And there's another mock-up software called Balsamiq. That's Balsamiq with a Q. And that one is charged for. They have some sort of, I think maybe a web plugin that might be free, but I would definitely choose Pop for now because, well, one, it's free, and it seems like it's going to be free for a while. The developers say it's going to be free until it's good enough to charge. Yeah.
And it's great. Yeah, it's awesome. Like, as of right now, it is iPhone apps only, but, I mean, well, you know, like, there's nothing for iPad
apps. For Android,
or,
yeah.
Or tablets, or if you want to.
It supports the iPad, yeah.
Well, it supports the iPad, but I think it's... I think even the iPad is still only for iPhone apps.
Like doubled up, yeah.
Like that particular aspect ratio. And it also, I don't think, supports the aspect ratio of an iPhone 5.
Oh.
So,
which
I mean,
you
whatever.
Splurged it's, on, by the way.
What's that?
Which you splurged on, by the way.
I didn't splurge necessarily because I've actually both my iPhone 5 and my iPad mini... Did you know that I got an iPad mini?
I think you might have mentioned it.
Okay, yeah. But anyways, well, you'd be surprised how much people will pay for things online. That's all I'm going to say. You just like, okay, well, let's go. I need this. Like, I was like, okay, I need $160 to get the iPhone 5. I have an iPhone 4S, and... I've got 2 years left out of my 3-year contract because Canada's stupid that way. I'm going to see if somebody will pay me $150 for this iPhone 4S that's got 1 year down on its contract. Yep, somebody didn't even try and talk me down.
Wow, nice.
You know, so like, I don't know. You guys have Kijiji down there. I know you have Craigslist. but that's basically all I did. And then for my iPhone or for my iPad, we had an iPad 2 and an iPad 3 here in my house. And so I was just like, hey, honey, you want my iPad 3? And then I'll sell you the iPad 2. And so sold the iPad 2 for $150.
Man.
No, 300. Sorry, 350. Somebody bought it for $350 and the iPad 3 or the iPad mini was 330.
Not bad at all.
So it, like people are like, oh, how do you afford all these new gadgets? Well, you just sell what you have for what.
And that's why we partnered with Gazelle. So if you use partner code geek, no, I'm just kidding.
Gazelle's another option, but there are people, if you go straight, you know, if you cut out the middleman and just go straight selling it on whatever you want and ask for more than you want. Because if you ask for more than you want, then you'll most likely get what you actually want in the first place, just slightly above it. And then, you know, there's lots of little tricks. I'm getting better at it.
You've,
so.
you've watched enough episodes of Pawn Stars to know how to haggle.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, like so, you know, like oh well, I'm selling this iPad 2 for $350. The regular $400. But if you actually pay me my asking price, it'll give you the smart cover for free. And they're like, okay, like I need two smart covers. You know, anyways, so. So, anyway, that's totally, I don't know how we went down that rabbit hole, but it's popapp, P-O-P-A-P-P dot I-N
yep.
is the website for that. Or you just check it out in the App Store. Very cool.
Fantasy Geek.
So we do have a few things in the Fantasy Geek section, and it's almost December. So that means that Fantasy Geeks around the world are clamoring even more so to watch The Hobbit, even whether in 48 frames per second or 24 frames per second, whatever floats your boat, or 3D or not 3D, or both, on December 14th. So, man, it's...
Oh,
it's,
I'm so excited for this. Now, I went and saw Wreck-It Ralph in theaters. In 3D, and they had a trailer, a 3D trailer for The Hobbit. Oh, dude. I don't know what they've been doing lately with 3D, but 3D is beginning to get a lot better.
Was it any idea if it looked like it was using the 48 frames per second?
I don't think my particular theater does or not. I doubt it. I doubt they would have showed a 48 frames per second trailer during Wreck-It Ralph. And probably because don't you need a special kind of projector for that?
Yep.
Yeah, but anyway, it is definitely with something that has as much CGI as The Hobbit does, I think that the 3D naturally is going to be better because you do all that stuff in post-processing anyway, so you do it in, you know.
Yeah.
But, this movie is going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it.
The Hobbit is also using Dolby Atmos, which is a special new surround sound kind of experience. Instead of, I don't know how many speakers are in the regular surround sound theater experience now, but this one's going to have 64 speakers, and it's not just, you know, in front of you and behind you and on the sides. This thing even has speakers above you.
Really?
Yeah, so you get, even Brave used this in a couple of theaters. Not a whole lot of theaters are using it. But one of them is near me, so I think that might be the one I go to just get the full-on Hobbit experience. Awesome.
This is where it gets dicey because it comes out on the 14th,
mm-hmm.
And my wife is due on the 27th, and so I really, really want to catch this in IMAX while it's in IMAX.
Yeah, you gotta hop on that bandwagon early.
Exactly. So who knows? It'll be really, really exciting though. Like, so good.
But speaking of,
I totally just lost my train of thought. I should have just let you keep going, but instead I had to call it out.
It's no problem. Speaking of the Hobbit, some of the soundtrack has been released. I'm not sure if the whole thing has, but at least once, because it was streaming earlier on preview, but now there's one song by Neil Finn, who was frontman of Crowded House. If you're wondering which Crowded House, it's this one. It takes a while to get to the
I got the groove going.
But it's a good band. He's used to be front man of Crowded House. Not sure if he still is. But he released a Song of the Lonely Mountain, his own take on the Hobbit song. And it is pretty dang good. Let's see if we can give you a quick preview. For home, a song. I love that song. So far, iTunes says I've listened to it, only 20 times? Oh, that's probably because I was listening to it on the Rolling Stone, which previewed it probably the whole day, at least 60 times. So, I mean, I've racked up a lot of plays on this song. It's good stuff. It's, I believe, maybe 99 cents or $1.29 on iTunes.
Okay, here's a question for you. How do you think it compares to, if this is the sound of the Hobbit trilogy, how do you, this Neil Finn sort of sound, how do you like it compared to the Enya sort of sound of the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
Well, this is supposed to play during the credits, so it won't be during the actual, movie.
Well, right, yeah, but
I really dig it. I can't wait to see what they do with The Hobbit. There's some things, some of my friends are have absorbed the Lord of the Rings and Tolkien kind of universe are concerned that the movie is being portrayed as less of a treasure hunt as it was in The Hobbit. Like the dwarves want to go get some gold rather mm-hmm. than as it is in the movie. Let's take our home back. Which, okay, yeah, that has a stronger story that people can get behind, I guess. But we still have to see, you know, which side they play up most, or how close they stay to the book. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it seems like now, admittedly, I haven't read The Hobbit. Geek shame, enter here. But it seems to me like The Hobbit has so many more dwarves in it, right? It's so dwarf heavy.
Oh yeah.
That I really like the sound of that particular song because it kind of feels a little bit more Celtic.
It has anvil.
Yeah, it's got like Celtic in it. You know, it's kind of got that Celtic undertones to it, and it sounds really cool. So
yeah,
I'm really excited.
So the 14th, just a PSA there in case life gets to us again and we can't record again, but I doubt that. We'll see you, hopefully, next week.
Video Game Geek.
So, easing into the Video Game Geek section, but still sticking with the fantasy theme, we're going to talk a little bit about Conclave. A couple months ago, during our hiatus, two developers, went out on Kickstarter and said, hey, we've got this game we've been making, it's called Conclave, and we'd like more content on there, so, you know, if you can kick us some money, that'd be great, and we'll make more quests for it. And so what turns out is, after looking into Conclave, it is essentially Words with Friends meets D&D. So, you know, as we found out with our last episode, D&D takes a long, long time to set up. You got to find the right quest, the right campaign. Maybe if you're into the thing, you know, you can make your own. That takes a lot of effort. And then finding the right maps, and then putting the maps together, making sure everybody's schedule syncs up. So it can be an ordeal to put these games together, but Conclave makes it easy. It's not exactly the same experience, though. So you go in and you create your character. You know, you start out with level one. You choose your race. You choose your class. And then you get zoomed into this map where you can select different quests. And you can invite friends to join your party. And you go on these quests. And it's essentially... it has an interface where you choose your attack. Or first, you know, you move the on this on a on screen map, move towards your opponents. You can choose an attack, and then it'll attack and whatnot, and it'll switch back and forth between the enemy characters and yourself. And so it's essentially, Words with Friends in that you don't have to all be playing at the same time.
Yeah, no, this is great. So as of right now, it's just in the browser, which is kind of unfortunate, honestly.
That's all right, though. I mean, you got a browser on your iPad, don't you?
Oh, is it iPad friendly?
Well, yeah.
Dang! Okay, now we're talking. Okay. Yeah, no, that's great then.
it doesn't have a whole bunch of quests, but they're on track to add more content thanks to the Kickstarter and whatnot. And you can actually still get in on the Kickstarter rewards through a PayPal scheme. And let's see, they've got shirts and merchandise, and if you're into it a lot. But, one problem I had with it was that if you playing in the same room is kind of nice. I mean, it loses the freedom that you get with D&D in that, hey, Dungeon Master, what happens if I go up and pet this horse? Well, if you roll a 19 or higher, it won't bite your arm off. You know, that kind of randomness is lost here, and the role playing, you know, it doesn't really work. I mean, you got a chat room, but it's not it's an okay substitute. It's not a fantastic substitute for what D&D is. But got some friends together to play this in person because we had thought, well, we kind of want to play D&D, but we don't want to go through the hassle setting this up. But it has this. This feature where if you're in the middle of selecting your move or your attack, and another player does it, it'll say another player has taken an action, and it'll like boot you out to like a screen or two before. And so when everybody's playing, it gets kind of frustrating to see that screen every goddamn time you want to do a new move. So it's got its kinks, but it's
okay. It seems more like a. A lot of these sorts of things, and I'll talk about another one in a second, these sort of online RPG things that seem to be becoming more popular, is wanting to play a D&D-style game online or, you know. It seems like they're really focused more on the sort of grid-based battle and not... And a lot of it is not... It doesn't really facilitate role-playing all that well, which, at least my personal opinion, is some of the best stuff that you can do.
I don't think it's so much as the grid that inhibits the role-playing. It's the nature of being separated and, you know, only having text and not having the leeway to say, what happens if I do X or Y, and being able to, like, break out your own story path.
Exactly. Yeah. And just the sort of organic evolution of the story and of the environment and, you know, that sort of a thing where if, in other words, if it's not, if you're not to a certain level or whatever, you're not to a certain location within the story, then, oh crap, we aren't there yet, you know, or that particular, that particular tavern, the tavern, whatever the tavern guy's name is, can't actually do anything or answer any of your questions, you know?
Yep.
He'll just tell you something, which, so there's, I still really liked that. What was the thing that we used called?
Dungeon Forge maybe, or?
For the Google Plus. Yeah. Was it Dungeon Forge?
I think so.
Something like that. Anyway, go back under our past show notes and you'll see it. It's definitely, I really liked that for the sort of more facilitating Google Plus sort of, if you wanted the real time experience of it too, but this is definitely more, you know, more of like a Words with Friends sort of thing. So
it's pretty nifty.
Very cool. We'll definitely have to try it out. I want to start a game with you and we'll play it.
Sounds good. And we'll put info on the show notes to our game so you guys can join in as well. So you've been playing another RPG, but this one's on iOS, right, Zach?
Yes. Here, let me get the sound going on it for a sec so that you can get the full experience. Oh, nope. Dang it. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. All right. I am going to get the full experience here and have to, my phone's being retarded. Hang on. No, this is good radio here. Did you play it?
No, I have not played it.
So it's called Knights of Pen and Paper, and it's essentially a it's, if you go into the app, it's all in 8-bit style, sort of, you know, the graphical look. And when you first get into the app, the entire thing basically, it shows like these people sitting in chairs, and there's the dungeon master sitting across the table from them. And throughout the game, as you get, you gain up in-game currency, then you can like buy a new table, which will give you like battle benefits, like increased attack or increased mana regeneration or whatever. And so, like, for example, in my particular party right now, I have Pizza Guy the Cleric, I have the Jock the Warrior, I have the Little Brother the Druid, and I have
the Little
Woofy the Paladin. And so basically, it's very tongue-in-cheek. So the entire thing, like, it'll show, initially, it'll just show, like, the room that you're sitting in for the background behind the Dungeon Master. But then, as you're going through the story, that background will disappear, and it'll show, like, this jungle that you're in, or this cave. And it's very much like going through the quests like you would in an RPG, like a pen and paper RPG. And the Dungeon Master will, there's, like, some banter back and forth between the Dungeon Master and the party members as you're going through and you're playing, you know, it's got a very Final Fantasy-esque turn-based battle system in it. And so it's got a really good merging of the two genres, like of pen and paper stuff with the classic JRPG.
And it seems like it has a sense of humor because it breaks the fourth wall.
It definitely breaks the fourth wall. Like, the entire thing is, you know, where it's, you are playing as the players playing an RPG.
Oh, hey, it's $1.99 and it's on Android too.
Oh, is it? Well, there you go. Yeah. So like it's an absolutely, I definitely recommend it. Like it is a really fun game. It's very easy to play in short bursts, and you can choose your own quests too. So like you don't necessarily have to just go through the motions of playing it as a linear RPG. Like you can create your own quests. You can just go out and fight monsters if you want.
So how do you create your own quest?
So essentially you go into it and like in the main menu, there's the quests and it will have an option of a bunch of different quests that I have. Oh, I forgot that I bailed out of this one earlier. I'm fighting a group of other, it's like a PvP sort of situation. So there's like a rogue and stuff, but basically, you can go and there's just like, there's the quests and it'll give you an option of a bunch of different quests, or there's also just fight some monsters. So just run out into the middle of the forest and fight monsters and it'll give you the available monsters at your level that you can fight.
Huh.
So more if you just want to, like, grind levels, essentially, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, if that's what you want to do, you don't need to. Like, the quest progression lines up pretty well with your level progression, so it's not too bad. But, it's really, really fun.
Now, for $1.99, it's so far you're describing a steal here now. Is there, like, a catch in terms of how many levels it has? Is it, can you just, like, blow through it?
I think I'm at level 10 right now. My guys are at level 10. And I think it goes up to level 30.
Man.
So it's definitely for $1.99, this type of game I could see being on the 3DS, for example, and you could easily charge $20 for it.
Yeah, I'd pay that much.
Yeah. Like it would be, or like you, if they were to put it on the eShop on the 3DS, they would charge $5 or $10 for it.
I haven't been this excited to play an iPhone game for a while.
Yeah, and it's universal, so you can play it on the iPad as well. My only gripe with the game is that it doesn't have iCloud syncing support. So if you start a game on your iPhone, you can't pick it up on your iPad and keep playing it. You have to play it entirely on your iPhone. So
that would be nice.
But yeah, it's really fun. I definitely recommend it. And at $1.99, it's a steal.
That actually reminds me, the whole concept where you have, you know, the whole fourth wall thing where it shows the guys around the table playing the game and then it goes into the game itself. I don't think we've mentioned this on the podcast, but a couple months ago I stumbled upon something called The Gamers, Darkness Rising. And it's a short film. Well, I'm not sure it's all that short. It's about an hour long, actually, of essentially that. Some guys, you know, just being themselves and then, like, trying to finish this campaign. And then it goes into the campaign itself. And you can, you know, see them, you know, making the jokes as they would as they're playing around the table and, like, cuts back and forth. It's really fun. It's on YouTube. I believe maybe their second film. They recently had a Kickstarter to do a third or a fourth, and they even have a series of videos that they've worked on. I think they have one or two seasons. It's up on YouTube for free, but I haven't been able to find the 12th part of the Darkness Rising film. So I think they might be holding out on me to buy the DVD.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I'm just remembering that whole LARPing, World of LARP thing. Oh, I watched quite a few episodes of that. I need to go catch up on that.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I watched probably a good like 5 or 6 episodes of that, and it was hilarious.
Yeah, it's good. And this is even better because you just got to watch it. It's a good show.
Yeah, cool. I'll have to go see that. I love that idea of just like, you know, these people playing the game, but then you get sucked into the game and you see actually what they're acting out. And
the production value is good too. I mean, it's not some, it's not some cheapo thing. It's actually very slick.
I think it would be a great thing to have somebody do, like an animated sort of thing with that.
Oh man, I'd really watch. Cool. I'd give them my $1.99 or likely more.
and even have like the live action for the people playing the game, but then, you know, jump in to animated. You know who would be the perfect people to do that, actually? Is the Penny Arcade people.
Oh.
And when they do it at PAX, their live PAX stuff, like Will Wheaton and Scott Kurtz and the Penny Arcade people, when they all do their live.
That reminds me, Geek and Sundry has a new tabletop podcast, aptly called Tabletop
with Will Wheaton.
Yeah, and they have they're on episode 16, I believe, and they have essentially geek stars and whatnot, and all sorts of folks come together and they play a tabletop game and they record their session.
Yeah, no, I've seen that before. I've watched quite a few episodes of that. It's really good. So
before the Skype monster eats you because you're sounding a bit garbly, a PSA here. The Steam sale, the autumn Steam sale is now live, so if you have an itch to burn even more than $1.99 on a video game, feel free to take a trip to Steam and start looking out for those deals because they've got a whole bunch of new ones.
Oh my gosh. Yes. In fact, if I can suggest one that you absolutely, if there's like all of these things on here, like seriously, World of Goo for $250, that's a steal. But the one that I really think that people should pick up is The Walking Dead.
Oh yeah.
Have you played the game?
I've not, but I've only heard good things about that thing, man.
Oh man. Now this is coming from somebody who's a freaking cheapo. I bought the entire season of The Walking Dead on the iPad and played through it. On the iPad, it's $20.
Man.
Like you pay $5 for the first episode and play through the first episode, and then you can buy the additional episodes within the app. You can buy all of them for $15.
I got to find out what happens next. $5.
Exactly. So I just paid the $15 outright and saved myself $5. But on Steam right now, it's $12.50. And it is a totally different group of people than in the TV show or the comic books. Mm-hmm. Like you may get like a cameo of Glenn, for example. I think in the first episode, Glenn is there for part of it, but then he's gone. And so like that sort of a thing is really, it follows through these particular characters who are totally different. And it's a lot truer. Like I love the style of the game. Because it's basically like it's 3D, it's sort of 3D is in like 3D models, but the texturing and the art style is exactly like the comic book. So it has this really cool hand drawn comic book look to it, and the stories, they make you make these really snap decisions that you have to make a decision right now, or this person will die, or this person will die, and that stays. Like for example, in the first episode, there's a moment I won't spoil anything other than just saying there's a moment in the first episode where you're holed up somewhere, zombies are getting attacked. There's zombies are attacking, and two members of your party are getting attacked at the same time. You can only save one of them, and the other one will die.
It's like a morning stream game of, for those not included, Morning Stream is a great podcast by Mr. Scott Johnson and Brian Ibbett. It's a rather kind of game.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really like, and so by episode five, I just am partway through episode four, but by episode five, they have so many, you've made so many different decisions, like such and such person died, and you told this person, like you were a jerk to this person. And so there's so much interweaving. You could play through the game multiple times, and I plan on it, just making different decisions. And you may get a totally, I assume that the basic progression of the story will be the same, but your personal relationships with the characters involved may be completely different.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool. It's the kind of game that everybody should play. So go pick
it
up for sure.
$12 and what, 49 cents for all the episodes, not just
all the episodes, is half off. It's regularly $25.
I'm gonna buy that right after this. And some advice from the chat room. Hero Brock, also known as Jake, in the chat room says, reminder to Steam users, you can save a lot by picking this, which is the Humble Bundle that is up in about 5 hours and 38 minutes, so it may not still be available while you're hearing this, and then using those Steam keys. And he says, another mistake people make is buying up deals before they even get cheaper. What you do is start keeping track of the games you want and pick them up as they become flash deals, even cheaper. If it isn't a flash/daily deal by the end of the sale, pick it up the last day.
Yeah, for sure. That's good advice. And like Darksiders 2, isn't that? I was under the impression that was a full price game, but $17 is half off, I believe.
Man.
Or no, that's am I saying 86% off? Yeah. $17 for Darksiders 2. Dang. Maybe I should go. If too bad I don't really have a good PC, so yeah. If it's not available for Mac, I can't do it. But
the
anyway,
that is right.
So yeah.
I guess one last a couple more things in the video game section. Man, we're video game heavy this week. Black and White 2. There's a piece up on Polygon about a essentially competitive Pokemon. Zach, you said you've had some experience, or at least secondhand experience with that.
Secondhand experience. I thought this was pretty interesting, just because it was, again, we're running a little bit long, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. Mm-hmm. But it was really, I thought it was interesting because essentially a lot of people probably don't realize that Pokemon is kind of has this sort of, I don't know if I would call it an underground. like underground Pokemon fight club. I don't know, like a sort of underground, like esports sort of a thing.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing. Now, my little brother, who's 8 years younger than I am, like when the original Pokemon game came out, that was like my time, right? I was in like eighth grade, seventh grade when that came out. And so I was big into that, but I just, back in those days, the sort of expert level just didn't exist because you had to plug things together. You know, you had to plug your cords in.
Line up IR ports, yeah.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even IR ports back then. It was like literally like the link cable between your two Game Boys and, you know, playing that way. And so the sort of expert level thing just didn't exist yet. But my little brother, who's, again, kind of grew up was in the Pearl Diamond. Is that what those ones were? Basically the DS
yep.
era of Pokemon. I got really big into the expert level stuff where like you are in now. What was the last Pokemon game you played?
The Gold, Heart Gold and Soul Silver. That era.
Right. So basically like if you get really deep into it, like you start worrying about like you will take your Pokemon, you'll go and like breed them. You know, you get this really good one with really good stats, and you get this other one with really good stats, and you breed them together and you try and really optimize uh-huh. the stats for that particular Pokemon, and you'll breed like multiple ones of them and trying to get the perfect stats for them.
And just a note here, when I played, I never paid attention to stats. It's just, hey, that attack does a lot of damage. That was just my as far as my expertise in Pokemon went.
Exactly, but like these, like when you get up to these pro levels, like they're saying, okay, well, this particular one, his ability, which, you know, is like that sort of passive ability that the Pokemon has, that particular ability meshes really well with this particular attack that they have, and so on, and so they construct these really big teams. So essentially, Game Freak. Now, Game Freak is actually the company who develops the games, and Nintendo doesn't develop the games. Game Freak does. They're the ones behind the Pokemon brand.
Yeah, Nintendo's publishing, yeah.
Yeah, Nintendo publishes it, but Game Freak is the one who actually creates the games. And so they've taken the world championship teams. I think there's 16 different teams that you can play against in Pokemon Black 2 and White 2, which I don't own, but I'll probably pick up. I haven't played Black 1 or White 1 or whatever. I haven't played a game for a while, but I'm kind of getting the itch.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually go online and play against these like championship teams, these championship lineups that these particular people played with during the finals. And there's this review on, or this article on Polygon, which basically they're saying that they're really working with Game Freak is really working with these championship teams. And these sort of, you know, these people, these really high-end people, and thinking, okay, well, now how can we make this game better? How can we take those sort of, you know, like the, what are they called?
So they're getting free playtesters.
Yeah, free playtesters. Like, for example, the many of Pokemon's expert-level mechanisms, like effort values and nature breeding, are hardly surfaced in the games at all. So, for example, effort values are kind of tied into stats, nature breeding, like I don't like you kind of see those in
Alexis needs an effort level of 20 to record a podcast.
Yeah, well, like exactly, there you go. But like nature breeding is like they introduce this mechanism later on in the game. So for example, you have a Pokemon who needs high special attack, you know, because he's using fire attacks, special attacks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a specific kind of nature, for example, like, you know, it'll say, oh, he is a rowdy nature, or he is a playful nature, or whatever.
Yeah,
those actually tie into your stats as well,
yeah.
Which you'd have no idea. They never actually tell you that.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting that they're maybe taking some of these sorts of ideas and maybe in the next, you know, as we go into the 3DS, they're crafting the Pokemon game into more of an esports sort of thing, which is actually a game that looks really superficial and really, you know, on the surface looks really kiddie, actually has a ton of depth. So. Yeah,
I love those games. I mean, I miss the days where my life was Pokemon, where I would just go to, you know, I go to school and then I come back home and then Pokemon, 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 you know, just like glued to my black and white red Game Boy, and that was it. I remember like trying to exercise, like going out for a walk and just like walking outside, like with my face buried in my Game Boy, just playing Blue Version.
Yeah, for sure. There's a comment in the Hero Proc in the chat room again saying, the problem with the Pokemon VG competition is it's just a numbers game. I don't see where specific player skill factors in due to being a turn-based RPG. Correct me if I'm wrong, but other than the preparation of your lineup, what else? See, that's true, but I think a lot of different, you know, it's all a lot of the building up to it and the strategy of building up the perfect team.
And there's, I guess there's also an element of choosing what Pokemon to go up against another Pokemon that's still a numbers game, but there's some tactics involved.
Yeah, there's a lot of different tactics. And if somebody throws you a curveball, you still need to be able to react to that. And if you didn't prepare enough, then you're hooped.
And which attacks to use first. But also, I sympathize with that as well. And that's honestly a lot of my issues with turn-based games is that it's just a numbers game, and that's why I tend to like action games a lot more, because, you know, I can actually move around and like swing my sword, and if I'm actually aiming at something, I can hit it and it does damage. But again, you know, each of these things have their own values. Not knocking on RPGs for RPG fans, because, you know, everything's it's got its merit, because, you know, I can enjoy. A Pokemon or something.
Exactly. And the thing is, too, is like one thing that my brother has like kind of opened my eyes to is like, for example, you want to start out, like your starting guy that you send out first is critical. And if you don't send out the right kind of guy first, you're hosed. So yeah. You'll see a lot of guys send out maybe, I don't know the strategy well enough, but like how you open your fight, for example, you come out with a guy who changes the weather to a certain way to boost stats, and he throws up like a barrier for defensive reasons, and then you pull him out and you pull out this really, you know, so there's a lot of swapping and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. For me, I was like, I'm going to send out this guy because he's cool. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And there's a lot of the AI in the Pokemon games is freaking dumb compared to the kind of strategy that goes on in the act. And I think it would be interesting if in the newer generations that you get a lot more strategy from the AI as well. So
yeah, Jake. Anyway, Jake in the chat room recommends that they can do in-game bike racing in Pokemon as well.
They got everybody's the exact same speed, and yeah. All you hear is the do.
Everyone wins.
But yay! And it's like that one downhill. There's that downhill area in the original game that you just everybody ride down the hill.
Yeah, I mean the closest I've gotten to competition Pokemon is this was back when I was maybe 10. Could be younger. In the local mall, Nintendo or Game Freak or one of the companies had an event where they invited, like, everybody who plays Pokemon, come on down. And they had scheduled, like, league fights, or, like, ranked battles. So from, like, 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock, or 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock, people with level 1 Pokemon, level 20, would compete for the water the gym badge or something.
Oh, and, no way. That's great.
Yeah. And so if you won, they would give you like these little plastic badges.
Oh, that's cool.
The symbol on both sides. And then they had a little hole so you could like put them on like this metal chain that you could hook up to that little loop in your Game Boy. And so I like racked up a water and rock badge, and then like got beat at the third gym or something. I mean, that was cool. And
that's really cool.
for being that age and being able to do that, man, that was awesome.
That's great.
But my favorite tactic is leveling up a Gyarados to 100 with rare candy, and and calling it Magikarp and telling your friend how your Magikarp is gonna beat him to pulp. But anyway, so the Wii U, but so we can keep the flow going here. Any thoughts about the system? Have you picked it up? Are you thinking about it?
I'm thinking about it. I don't really see anything in the initial lineup that I'm super jazzed about playing. You know, from what I hear, it's the best Mario game. Mario U or whatever it is the best Mario game since Super Mario World, from what I've seen. But other than that, yeah, like there's nothing too crazy that I'm super excited about for the Wii U. I did go to a GameStop and play it, and the sort of asynchronous multiplayer, I don't know if asynchronous is the right word, but you know, where I played the Rayman Origin, is it Rayman Legends demo?
Yeah, Legends, yeah.
Yeah, and played it multiplayer with just some random guy there, and was really, really impressed with the sort of multiplayer stuff that's going on in that game. Unfortunately, I don't think that game comes out until next year.
March or February or something, yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting. But other than that, like it's interesting. It seems like I have one particular gripe about their execution of this, but I want to hear your thoughts first.
Okay. So, as far as the Mario game, NSMBU, I haven't heard that high of praise of it, but I've heard it's the best in the new Super Mario Brothers series since like one of the DS games. It was kind of flat.
Yeah. Sorry. When I say the best since Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo, I mean 2D Mario games.
And
so I think that's kind of the same thing. But anyway.
I haven't picked up a Wii U, and I had to resist every fiber in my being from picking up a shiny new Nintendo console, and it's just a new gadget. I gotta have it, but I resisted because you know I gotta focus on programming GI and getting that out of the door. But I did play some Rayman Legends co-op with a friend at Best Buy for about 10-15 minutes. It was pretty fun. I'm not sure I did anything with the gamepad that I couldn't have done with a Wii remote, but it was a fun thing. So I look forward to seeing what games Nintendo's comes out with. Hopefully Luigi's Mansion. Who knows with you know another Zelda and all sorts of stuff. But as always with the Nintendo system, what's going to make it for me are the first party games.
Yeah, it's interesting because Nintendo first-party games are really, looking back, are really the majority of the games that I've played throughout my life. Like, I don't play a ton of video games other than first-party Nintendo games, which is kind of, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, you're missing a bunch of stuff, but I'm really not interested in, like, I'm pretty picky on the kind of games that I play. So yep. Pikmin 3, I think when that comes out, I'll probably pick it up. Because I played some of the other Pikmin, and if I don't have one by the time Smash Brothers has come out, then I definitely will come, or I definitely will get the Wii U then.
Oh yeah, I'm going to buy the Wii U at some point. When,
yeah, same here.
Who knows?
However, my biggest gripe with this is still, and if you listen to the Giant Bombcast, they went on a big long rant about this week, and I, you know. Essentially, my biggest problem with it is their online stuff so far, where it seems like it's not necessarily your online ID necessarily. It's more of the fact that this was the perfect opportunity for them to revamp their online account sort of thing. Because I think they initially said that they were going to have it set up so that you could have your purchases tied to your account and not to your system.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like, and not only, so for example, right now, before the Wii U came out, you've got your Wii and your Wii points on your Wii for the Wii eShop, right?
So many
your Wii points,
Wii.
Your Wii points on the Wii, right? So if you go and get a gift card for your Wii, because you want to buy games on the Wii, you can't take those points and buy 3DS games with them. You have to go and buy a 3DS point card. Right? Yeah. You have to put money on your 3DS point card. And now you've got your Wii U, and if you put money on your account for your Wii U eShop account, you cannot take that money and buy 3DS games on your 3DS because those accounts are not tied. You've got three different stores, and if you want to buy WiiWare on your Wii U, you have to boot it up in Wii mode, go into your Wii into the WiiWare shop, buy WiiWare, but that money that you have on your Wii account on your Wii U, you cannot buy Wii U games in the eShop. It's so messed up.
You know, if I had enough time of the day, I would edit that past minute into you just going Wii 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 Wii. But I don't think there's enough time for that.
No, we need to step out of, or Nintendo needs to step out of 2003. Exactly. And I suspect that within the next year, you're going to see some sort of if they do not announce this at E3, I am going to freak out. What they need to do at E3, they need to announce a software update for the 3DS and the Wii U, that both of your Nintendo Network accounts are tied to your Club Nintendo account. And all of those accounts become one account. And essentially then you don't have to worry about your stupid purchasing thing where, oh crap, I dropped my 3DS in the water and it's toast and now all my purchases are gone.
Yeah, Jake in the chat room says, we've been waiting since 2006. And he's got a point. I mean, we've been waiting a long time for Nintendo to get its act together. But we've got to admit this is progress for the slow moving company.
Laffer says at least you can move your points from the Wii to the Wii U's Wii Mode Wii Shop. Yes, is true. When you do the system transfer from your Wii to the Wii U, your points, you still have to boot into Wii Mode and then go to the Wii Shop and you access that. And you, oh my gosh. And not only that, but if you have like virtual console games on your Wii that you transfer to your Wii U, you have to boot up the Wii U in Wii mode and then access the virtual console games that way, and not just boot up a virtual console section on your Wii U. You have to boot it up in Wii mode, which it's really convoluted and weird.
I'm so confused. Okay, so Wii U, it's for us at least, it's a pass for now.
Yeah, for now. I mean, I'm definitely going to be picking it up within the next 6 months to a year. But
who knows? It might break down and just buy it anyway because it's new hardware and I like to keep up to date on things. But we shall see. So something that doesn't exactly fit into any of our categories here for geek types, but I was thinking about geek improvement programming on the site and thinking, where can I find art assets and for not just for geek improvement, but for other web projects, or hell, even if you're making an indie video game, if you need art or if you need a new avatar. You know, where do you go? I mean, sure, you could like dig through DeviantArt and find someone's style who you really dig and then contact them and go through all that rigmarole. But after, kind of thinking a lot about it on Twitter, I was reached out to by Artists and Clients. It's at artists, clients.com. And it's essentially a marketplace for artists and clients. So folks who are artists, they go and they say, hey, look, this is a sample piece of my art. I can do something like this for you for $20 or $15 or even $150. And the talent here is pretty impressive. So for example, one of them here is a painted portrait for $20. So, hey, I want a new avatar. Can you do a portrait of me for $20? And just sling them a Facebook photo, and you're good to go. And so if you just want some custom art done, this is the place to do it.
This is cool. This is – so then I'm kind of understanding a little bit more what this is. So essentially, on the front page here, they're just showing samples of people's art, but you can get them to draw whatever you want.
Oh, yeah. So you click on it, and it's like, oh, man, I like that style. And, for example, here someone's having a lineless full body character painting. And they say its base price is $15. And this status, they have, like, slots, so if you can't hire them if they're busy. And you say, oh, yeah, they've got 1 out of 6 slots available, so they got space for one more commission. And you commission the artist, and I believe that Artists and Clients holds your payment. And then when they finish your work and give it to you, then Artisan Clients gives them the money.
This is awesome. So pretty nifty. I really, really like this.
And so if you're an artist, Mr. Erickson, you can put up your own sketch and say, hey.
Really? Oh, and hey, you know what? I might actually do that. That's awesome.
Yeah, this one person's doing bookmarks for $6. And all sorts of stuff. It's pretty neat. This one guy has a detailed pencil drawing. Kind of looks like Loki on here. Hell, I think it is Loki. It's pretty slick. And waist up, $23 to $35. Full body, $40 to $45. I don't even know what I'd want a drawing of. But it's like, you know, I just want to commission one of these guys to like draw something awesome, because that is a deal.
And the thing is that I. The nice thing about this, and this is just my own personal thing, but you can charge whatever you feel it's worth. So if you initially are like, well, I'm not a very good artist, so maybe I'll just draw like, you know, maybe I'll just charge $5 and then whatever they get, right? That sort of a thing. I think that's great. That's a great idea.
And shout out to our own designer, Naomi at Naomi Yaki on Twitter is her handle. She's been doing some amazing stuff for Geek Improvement. And
she totally has. That's great. She's doing awesome stuff.
Can't wait to show you in January. Not saying quite when in January, but expect to have the open beta hit in January. Then one last thing, comic book fonts. We're planning on having at least a few more episodes before the year's out, but the folks over at comiccraft.com and their shop is comicbookfonts.com. Every New Year's, they have a new they have a sale. And they have some fonts that are worth like hundreds of dollars, or font packs at least. They can get pretty pricey. But they've got some slick-looking fonts, and every New Year's Eve, or is it New Year's Day, I can't remember, they have a sale for all of their fonts. Even the pricey ones are going to be $20, and in this case, I believe, 13 cents, because of the new year. So look out for that, just a forewarning that if you want some really slick comic fonts, don't forget about that sale. We'll remind you again, especially if you follow us on Twitter, at Geek Improvement. And also, you know, I guess we could wrap up the show now. You can send us an email at podcast@geekimprovement.com or call us in, or call in, don't call us into the police unless we've done something illegal. You know, don't exactly want that.
It's possible, but, you know.
Yeah, just you know, keep it on the download. 65 Ring Geek, that is 657-464-4335. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for topics, or, you know, if you're just lonely and you want to talk and, you know, the tryptophan's getting to you and you're in some kind of daze, drop
don't
us a line.
You be spreading that terrible myth of tryptophan. I've educated you otherwise.
I wasn't spreading the myth of tryptophan. I was spreading the myth of, well, not the myth, but our future business plan of condensing 100 baked turkeys into some sort of tryptophan formula that we can then sell.
Ah, there we go.
Look for that at geekimprovement.com/tryptophan. Not really.
Very nice.
So thanks, Zach. I mean, it was good of you to hop on here on non-Canadian Thanksgiving. And man, I can't wait to do this again.
Indeed. Thank you.
So we'll see you next week. And of course, sign up for the beta, geekimprovement.com, and plug your email in. See you next week. And or possibly the week after that.
Ta-ta.